Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam in the Morning podcast, brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers, where I get my wild country tires. Les Schwab, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Relax, all right? My old man is a television repairman. Got the ultimate set of tools. I can fix it.
With Dusty Fan Man Hera.
I know Kung Fu.
And former pro Cam Cleland.
You ought to spend a little more time dealing with yourself, a little less time worrying about what your brother does.
Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080.
Pucker up, Buttercup.
The Fan.
All right, hour number three on this beautiful Monday morning. Dusty Hera, Cam Cleland. You folks are... Seems like everybody's having a pretty good Monday today. We're getting a lot of no case of the Mondays. I'm a Chiefs fan. How about those Chiefs? You tell me before that game, Pat Mahomes doesn't throw for a TD. I'd have lost my blank. This is the best team I've seen in my 25 years of watching football.
Wow. That's a pretty good rousing endorsement. I do believe that that has to do with how beautiful it looks outside. Today.
I think there is, and all weekend.
All weekend.
You had a great feeling all weekend.
Yeah, that vitamin D thing is really, really good.
Everybody likes the D.
I wore shorts on Saturday.
You did?
Yeah.
Shorts weather, huh?
Yep.
All right.
You and Mike Lynch.
I guess.
Are you a cargo shorts man, Buck?
Hell no.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think that's all that's in Mike's closet.
Just a question. I mean, back in 1998, maybe.
All right. This texture, though, case, this is a pretty brutal one. Especially when you have the buddy who does this. My buddy's golfing at Bandon Dunes and setting me picks. It's been 60 and sunny, no wind in January for three straight days, and I'm stuck at work from P1 Alex.
That's incredible.
Feel good for him.
I do. Anytime you're at Bandon Dunes and you get that, I don't care where you are. I don't care if the weather's blowing sideways and stuff. You're out there. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's God's country.
We had, I played on Bandon Dunes, the actual Dunes course, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was sideways rain, 45 degrees for the 12 hours prior to us playing. And then we were on the putting green, and it started game being less sideways. Then we got up to the first tee box, and it stopped. Sun popped out for 3 hours. And then when we finished our final putts on 18, we were walking back up to the clubhouse, started dumping rain again.
There you go.
It was like
perfect.
Big man upstairs smiled down on us. All right. Bandon Dunes is beautiful. Let's talk a little NFC playoffs, huh? Yesterday, and we briefly kind of got into Drew Brees and what the New Orleans Saints went through in that game. But the first play of the game, Drew Brees drops back, throws an interception. Eagles go down and score. First quarter, Nick Foles has hit seven different receivers. In the first 9 minutes of the game, it's 14-0, and the Saints didn't even have a yard of offense. And you were going, no. I think all of us sat there and said, Nick Foles is going to do it again.
Yeah.
He is going to do it again. And then that death march that we talked about in that third quarter, 18 plays, 92 yards, 11 minutes and 29 seconds.
And they overcame so many third downs, big-time penalties, and conversions on third and long. I mean, not just long, third. I think it was third and 13, third and 16. And all Michael Thomas did would have 12 receptions for 171 yards and a touchdown. He's incredible. He's just a physical specimen. And Drew Brees did everything right in that game. I mean, you got to win those games ugly. And then going into that, you would have thought that Sean Payton, it was going to be an offensive spectacle between the two. But 10 points in the second half. And guess who scored all the 10 points? New Orleans.
Nolens, yeah.
Philly didn't score another point in the first quarter. They came out of the gate, 14 points. They were goose egg the rest of the game. However, I do believe, and I said this earlier, that I do believe if that interception and Jeffrey does not drop that ball, I believe that Nick Foles and the Eagles go down and win that game.
So that final drive of the game.
And that's just a prediction. Maybe the Saints could have got it, but opportunistic, make a play on defense, ball goes through your hands. A lot of things have to happen to get there. Two turnovers were huge because both of those turnovers sealed the game. One got you the drive, they ended up scoring, and the next one won the game for you.
And that was it came on the heels of a missed 51-yard field goal from New Orleans, and it gave the Eagles life. Like, they were down 20-14.
Yeah,
if they make that field goal, the game's over.
Well, Michael Bennett made that play because prior to that, they hand the ball off to Kamara, and Bennett just exploded and made
Max Unger.
Well, Max Unger was on skates. He just got embarrassed, and he got, I think it was a 6-yard loss, and it changed the entire thing, because you go from 51, 52 to 45. That's a difference.
Yeah, 45.
Kickers are mental.
Well, and then you had Nick Foles marching out, and I'm right there with you. There were three different times in this game where I said, this team, there's no way this team loses. It was at the beginning, and when Nick Foles and the offense was humming, and he's distributing the ball to everybody, and then it was that death march drive where the Saints took the lead. I was like, yep, there's no way this team loses. And then Foles gets the ball back, and he goes marching down the field, and then that interception where it just bounces off the fingertips. You had that feeling during that game that they couldn't do any wrong. But what got New Orleans back in the game in the first place, you can't account for it, but injuries, man. In that second quarter, Fletcher Cox, Michael Bennett, they all got injured, and then they lose their starting left guard for the season on what was, I guess, a brutal Achilles injury. It's amazing how a game can flip on its head when a team looks like it's dominating, it looks like it's cruising, and then a couple injuries, and boom, the tides are right back on the other side.
A couple factors went into the reason why the Saints ended up stymieing on defense. They played a lot better, but the couple factors were, number one, you had two turnovers. That's pretty impressive. That will change the game. And number two is you converted on third downs, third and longs. Were huge, Michael Thomas. And then lastly, the third factor is your fourth down. You went for it on a fake punt with Hill, which kept the drive going. And then on your own goal line, you decided not to run the football. You threw a great two-man game in that man coverage on the side. And I think it was it Kirkwood who got the corner touchdown, a beautiful over-the-shoulder ball. And that was a ballsy call too. But Sean Payton did things in to be able to convert on fourth down, third down, and create two turnovers. That's what you do as a team game, and that's exactly what the Saints did.
If you look at the teams that won on divisional weekend, they all did something that their opponents failed to do. They won third down, they ran the ball better, and every single team that won converted a fourth down.
Right.
Every single team. Seven winning teams went 7 of 8 on fourth down. The only one that didn't, Kansas City went 3 of 4. Rams 2 of 2. New England 1 of 1. New Orleans 2 for 2 on fourth down. Third down, kind of putting the balls on the table, if you will, by the head coaches and going for it on fourth down and then pounding the rock. I mean, Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, neither one of them had 100 yards individually, but they combined for 137 yards to Philly's, 49. If you look at the Patriots, they get 129 out of Sony Michel. And that brings us to the other NFC game. Damien Williams went for over 100 in Kansas City's game. And that brings us to the Rams and Cowboys, where they had 200-yard rushers and absolutely punished the Dallas Cowboys on the ground and then held them to 1 of 10 on third down.
And right now the NFL has told us in this day and age is that offense is going to get you there, and offense is going to be what wins games now moving forward for football. Where we're at, right, in this part of the game, from the Sean McVay, touch me, I'm a golden child, to everybody getting hired in that, the final four teams, both 1 and 2 seeds are all in. That means the two or the four best teams in the NFL are all going to battle it out to go to the Super Bowl. It's perfect. It's like synergy, but also not only the four best are the four best offenses, with the Chiefs at 35, the Rams at 33, the Saints at 31, and the Patriots at 27 points respectively. This is what the league wants. This is what they've created. Defense, folks, no matter what you want to say, wins championships. Right now, it's your offense. That's what they want.
No doubt about it.
And they want it for the fan experience, and they want it for you to watch it on TV, because everybody was watching this weekend.
Oh, were they ever. Massive ratings, by the way, like 23 ratings for the Saints and Eagles game. Do we think that was anything kind of answered in these games by the Rams and the Chiefs? Because their defenses were the questions, right? Did you learn anything that was answered and answered definitively between those two defenses?
Between who? Which two defenses?
The Rams and the Chiefs. Because both of them had their obvious concerns against the run, and they had massive concerns on third downs, too, with both of them kind of staying off the field.
I kind of believe this, and this is kind of how it's always been, is that your defense can keep you in a game, but your offense can flip the momentum and give your defense emotional spark. So what it does is when you're a defensive coordinator and you know you have the offense on the other side where you can take more risks, You can do more things. You can make a few more calls. You can do those things. You can rush the passer. Because remember what I said on Friday. What did I say the game plan for Kansas City was has to do versus Indianapolis? Rush four. There's no reason to blitz him. You rush four. If you can get to the quarterback with four, and Kansas City was able to do that with four, they dropped enough, and that put the pressure on there, is that if you blitz Andrew Luck, he's going to make you pay. All these teams, when you have that kind of offense, knowing that they're on the other side of the ball, as a defensive coordinator, you're smiling ear to ear because even if you do make a mistake, your offense will pick you up.
Well, they didn't make very many mistakes against Indianapolis, and the Colts looked horrific. I think that I probably learned a little bit more about Kansas City than I did about the Rams. You know, I think we're going to be setting up for another pretty high-scoring affair, New Orleans and in Los Angeles. But Kansas City's finally healthy up front. And if Eric Berry can return from that heel injury,
yeah,
watch out for that.
Always nice to have.
For that defense. And, yeah, apparently he was close, but just still unable to do it for this past weekend. And it's going to be – I'm pumped. We mentioned it at the beginning of last week. There's no way that the NFL would have been unhappy with their matchups that they had. When you get the 1-2 in both the AFC and the NFC, and the fact it's Kansas City, New England, the Rams, and the Saints, they have got to be over the moon with these matchups because it's going to be fun leading up to it. 55305, one thing that all these teams have is great quarterback play. And we asked you earlier, why is the quarterback position the most important position in sports? You heard from the quarterbacks who won. There's something to these guys who lost this past weekend, too. 8-16 on the Fan. All right. Most important position in sports was highlighted yesterday as we saw Drew Brees, Tom Brady dissect and carve up the defenses of Philly and L.A. And, man, Tom Brady was surgical with what he did. And then late in the game, so was Drew Brees, converting huge third downs. Even a 3rd-and-16, and they had, what is it? They had 2nd-and-20. That he converted on one, on the same drive. He had a 3rd-and-16 and a 2nd-down-and-20. And we were talking about the importance of these quarterback positions, and we went through the winners. We went through Brady, Brees, Mahomes, and Goff. My gosh. But if you listen to the way and just kind of the leadership manifesting it itself in different ways, you can take it from guys who lost too. And Andrew Luck is a great example of this after the Colts were absolutely beat down by the Kansas City Chiefs.
It's been a rewarding season in many ways, and this is not the end that anybody in that locker room wanted, myself included. We wanted to go 1-0 this week and continue on this journey. Very thankful I could play football. I'm thankful to be in a locker room, thankful to run on the field and throw it to my friends. It was a rewarding season, a fulfilling season. I think I improved as a quarterback, very much so, and I know I've got a lot more improving to do.
That was a question by Andrew Luck.
Yeah.
I think I've improved as a quarterback.
He's incredible. And you look, how humble is that?
Yeah.
But is that entertaining? Is listening to that entertaining?
The part where he says, I get to throw a football to my friends.
It's interesting. He's a nerd.
What a nerd.
He legitimately is having fun.
Yeah, he
does
is.
It
That's
sound
great.
Like it's it, does it sound disingenuous? At all. Does it sound like it's more about some chip on my shoulder?
No, if anything,
I have something.
I would think Colts fans this morning might think he should be a little more ticked off.
Well, but there's something about that. Because listen to Nick Foles after they lost, and he's in a weird position where he's a backup who's going to be getting paid $20.5 million for a former first-round quarterback who was playing like an MVP last year. And this guy won a Super Bowl and is a backup.
That's a tough question. You know, it's a really unique situation. Something that, honestly, I need time to just step back. I love the city. I love playing there. You know, we have three guys in that quarterback room that can play in this league. And that's the part about it. But I'll tell you this, no matter what happens, it's been a joy. Playing in the city, being in that quarterback room with Carson and Nate, I'm going to work every day, and I know we talked about it earlier, but the city means so much to me and my family, you know, and it always will.
A guy just got...
Oh, gosh.
His heart ripped out.
Just... It's so fantastic
and
to listen to.
Philly fan is going to be the one that says, why isn't he more upset? Right?
because he's got the two characteristics are the most important in all of football.
And keep that in mind that when you hear the other guy who lost yesterday in Philip Rivers, because we were sitting there. These guys don't sound like Baker Mayfield or Cam Newton or Jameis Winston, who make you believe that somebody stole their puppy and kicked Baxter right off a bridge, right? Listen to Phil Rivers at the end of the season.
It is emotional just because I think you know how hard it is to get to January the 13th and be in a playoff game. You're talking an 8-9 month deal, and to come up short again is tough. But a lot of good this year. I think as the dust settles, you can appreciate more of that. But certainly disappointing finish. But you get up and start again.
It's incredible about that. Almost 11, 12 years ago, he was in a championship game playing with no ACL against the same team. Mm-hmm. Doing that on one leg. And here he is starting again. You could hear his emotion. And he was very emotional. And he was after the refs. He got taken out mentally, in my opinion, during that game. He started worrying more about the calls and the hits and all those other things. But you could hear him after the game. It's the two characteristics that you have to have and is maturity and leadership. Well, and every single one of these guys, when they get there, they all sound the same.
Into working the refs, we were watching the replay here. Flowers got called for roughing the passer on a play that, I don't know, who's the CBS guy? Who's the CBS guy that does the officiating pop-ins? Is it Carenti? But he came in and was like, no, he was blocked into him. But Phillip Rivers was working the officials, and it may seem overzealous at times, but it got him a call on what wasn't a PI, but it worked for him. But you're right. He did get kind of worked out of the game because instead of making adjustments and talking with his teammates and his coaches, he was trying to yell at officials when defense was on the field. In the final one, Dak Prescott, the youngest of these guys who got taken out this weekend in the playoffs, how's the young guy going to handle it?
We just let an opportunity slip. I don't think this has anything to do with the home field advantage or not. Credit Cowboy Nation, just the way that they came out and supported here tonight. I don't think home field advantage was really a factor for them in winning this game. They just executed when we didn't, and they're the better team tonight. Simple as that.
Maturity, boring, leadership, humble, respectful, all the things that every one of these guys, even in losing,
even thankful and grateful to his fan
base. And grateful opportunity. I'm playing a game, I'm getting paid to play a game, I'm doing all the things, and they're all disappointed. You know, they all have that gut wrenching feeling, just beat down, and be like, man, I've been doing this since July. You know, Philip Rivers said it best, man, 8-9 months, and it's just over just like that. And you could sit there and you can whine, you could complain, you could point fingers, you could blame. None of them did.
Nature versus nurture is a football thing too. You know, like we were talking about how the winning quarterbacks in the earlier textual, it manifests its way in different, it manifests itself in different ways. The type of leader that you have and the leadership that you have, but you have a quarterback that is the ultimate leader of your team, and you hear the way these guys are talking, it does. Like, you can see the image of these teams falling in line and behind the type of leader that they have at the quarterback position.
Yeah, two things. Yeah, it always happens. Your reflection of your head coach, and then you take on the identity of your quarterback. Sorry, you do. Carolina, you do. Tampa, you do. Browns.
Well, hey.
You do. Green Bay.
Tennessee right now.
Yeah, anemic. That's what Marcus Mariota, it's what it is. The good teams don't. They don't allow it. Josh Rosen. Look at that. San Francisco. I mean, they didn't have their guy there, but there's a lot more factors that go in. But those are the key ones. And I look at this every single year. I go, it's not hard to pick out the characteristics and see, does my guy have it or not? Now, exceptions don't prove rules. You'll get an occasional guy that'll make a run. A Cam Newton will make a Super Bowl, but it won't hold up over time. Consistent. It won't.
Well, I think that when we look at that too, though, like there's also a matching of your quarterback with the management that they're with. And we talked about Jared Goff being a great example of this, of Jeff Fisher, and you're talking about your head coach and then your quarterback. Like, these guys can evolve with the people that they're paired with, right? And that's why these head coaching hires are so important, and why we see so many offensive-minded head coaches getting jobs, is because it's hard to find a Belichick slash Brady pairing together because those two guys,
it's impossible to find.
I know, yeah. But what you're trying, what I mean is a defensive guy and that quarterback kind of relating on that level, you know, because how many other times can we say that? Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, who are an anomaly in the NFL with kind of the attitude and way that franchise is run.
Yeah. Everybody has their own signature kind of feel, and they have their own stamp. What we do know is what always is consistent is stable leadership at the top. And then everyone else, you're going to get the crazies. I mean, there's plenty of dudes on the LA Rams. There's plenty of guys that are nuts. There's crazies, but the stability comes from your quarterback and your head coach. Why is Rex Ryan, why is he no longer coaching in football right now?
Well, because he's wild.
Instable, unstable. Just didn't ever have it. They found ways to be crazy defense, but instability means inconsistency.
And I know people will say, well, how do you explain the Cincinnati Bengals then? Because Marvin Lewis was there for so long.
What'd they ever do?
But hold on. What? Well, yeah, that's the thing. They were like this beacon of stability, though, with their head coach and their quarterback, and they had him for a long time. But here's the thing. They just kind of peaked out at what they were, which is like a 8, 9, 10 win team that never was going to get over the hump, you know? But they were stable. They were consistent. They had it. You also have to find it at the highest of levels. And that's what makes like the Brady Belichick run insane. It's what makes the rebuild in Seattle with what Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson were able to do this year so incredible to see. It really is how quickly they were able to do that. 55305, your feedback on the Better You Today text line coming up as we need to head and switch gears to baseball a little bit. Yes, last Friday we told you about Jenny Burdick, who is a state senator, and her wanting to repeal SB 5, which is $150 million that was set aside for Major League Baseball Stadium back in 2003. She had a town hall meeting this past weekend. One of our listeners was there, and he sent us some audio of it, and you will hear why Jenny Burdick wants to take that $150 million away from the Portland Diamond Project next. Here's Buck with SportsCenter. All right, one of our P1s, Scott LeVere, he sent out a tweet on Saturday afternoon that he had gone to Jenny Burdick's town hall meeting. She is the state senator who proposed Bill 607, which is a repeal of SB 5, the $150 million that would go from tax dollars going to the Portland Diamond Project to fund their stadium downtown. Now, there's a lot of misconceptions about that, in that people think that it's your dollars, my dollars, Buck's dollars, all of our listeners' dollars in tax money, when it is not. It would come from a pool of money that is from player salaries that come and play baseball in the city of Portland. And so she was at the town hall, and Zach LeVere, one of our P1s, was listening. He said, hey, I got some audio of this. Do you guys want it? Do you guys want it? I said, sure. And it was about 3.5 minutes in length. But there's a minute and a half where I think a lot of us on Friday, we were talking about this, Cam. We said, why does she feel this way? The answer, bureaucracy. Take a listen.
In 2003, when Major League Baseball first started to come to Oregon, we passed a bill that said the legislature would provide bonding for a stadium. And the bonding, instead of just going through the Ways and Means process, which everyone else has to go through, the higher ed, anyone with capital construction has to go through the Ways and Means process. Instead of that, we would say these bonds will be paid for by skimming off part of the additional income tax revenue from these highly paid baseball players. And I thought it was pretty hinky at the time, but I ended up being persuaded very reluctantly to vote for it. And it's one of my, when people ask me, what are your biggest mistakes in the legislature? That's on the list. And so this time, Tax Fairness Oregon came to me and said, we really want to repeal this. Will you do it? And I said, yes, I will. And so I could team sponsor the bill. I believe, you know, if the baseball people, because their argument is, well, if these high-paid players didn't come, we wouldn't have the money anyway. And my argument back is, if they have, if you have an argument that Oregon will make money off of this proposition to spend $150 million on a stadium, you go for it. You bring it to Ways and Means like everybody else and make your case. And that's why I sponsored this bill.
All right. So, if you heard that, she said that what she wants to do is just make sure the bureaucracy runs its course. Mind you, she voted for this back in 2003.
Yeah.
It has been sitting untouched since 2003. And now they feel it's a problem. 16 years later. And I know a lot can change over 16 years. But all she's saying is that they just want it to go through more bureaucracy, but it did the first time. That's why it was voted upon.
I have absolutely 100% no respect for whatever that woman just said. Zero.
Why is that?
Because not only did she use the word skimming off professional athletes, which is a joke, and then went and said, I was persuaded. You were elected to stand up and have a vote based on what you think is right. You were persuaded by whom and what?
Yeah.
And you voted for this. Now, you can change your mind, but then to say you're skimming off of professional athletes. What? And so I just zero respect for whatever that comment was.
So what I thought she was going to say was that there are some hidden ways that where they're going to be taking the money from or how they're going to be getting the money and that we would be paying for it out of our pockets. And that was the most surprising thing from that is that she did not. I mean, it really is that she just wants it to get tied up in our bureaucracy and paperwork and making sure people debate it and talk about it. That's what happened in 2003. It is. And so now we're looking at it here 16 years later, and you just want to rehash it again? Well, it's not going to affect the average citizen of the state of Oregon.
And also, it's not going to affect whatever happens here. It's fine. No. Whatever you want to listen to, find more reasons to blah, 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 blah about more bureaucracy of crap. That's fine.
I just think that it is amazing to me.
Just stand up and say you don't care.
Right.
Have the guts to stand up as an elected official and say you just don't care about baseball and you don't find any value. I would respect that more than using this roundabout words to try to act like you do care or you're worried about it because none of it affects you.
Yeah.
Zero.
She wants to hear it debated on the floor.
Right.
It to go through Ways and Means.
She wants to hear herself talk more.
Okay. Yeah,
it's exactly what you didn't care about whether the tax dollars are used or not. You just wants to hear more reasons to talk.
And that is why when this thing is all said and done, this is why it comes down to the calls, the emails to your representatives. That's where it matters. Even if one of them is not a senator or representative that is currently opposed to it, is showing your support so they know. Mm-hmm. The more people that know,
yeah,
the better off that this thing is for to not being repealed and to just continuing to be the way it has been for 16 years now.
Sure.
16 years.
It's always nice to hear elected officials talk about skimming tax dollars and about being persuaded to vote something.
Yeah.
Yet a few years later, now all of a sudden, that was on my huge political. How are you?
Yeah. Okay.
Insane.
There it is, 55305. That is the Better You Today text line. Get some of your feedback on this. Plus, a wild weekend around our sports landscape on some things that we need to address here before we wrap up this Monday show. Dustin Cam on the Fan. All right, bros and broettes. We will take your feedback. Better You Today, text signs 55305. We heard from Jenny Burdick.
P1 Dustin nails it.
My God.
He goes, Better You Today, text line. Let's be honest. Persuaded is code for paid off in politics. She just wants more money. I mean bribes.
Yeah.
I was persuaded.
Yeah. Jenny Burdick,
earmarked?
If you missed the last segment, we played audio of her town hall meeting where she discussed why she has proposed Senate Bill 607, which would be a repeal of SB 5, State Bill 5, which earmarked $150 million for a Major League Baseball stadium in Portland. Back in 2003, she said that she, in fact, voted for it, but she was persuaded to do it.
What a joke. And now you just lose all credibility when you say that.
Yeah, and this is one, for someone that has worked in politics before, ways and means means that they're just trying to send it there so it will die and never get out again. And yeah, that's exactly what she wants to do.
Yeah.
And she doesn't say, she never gave a reason why, other than she called it skimming the player salaries. Although it's a jock tax, and a jock tax is in every single state, every single city that has a professional sports team. Mm-hmm. When athletes come to visit your city, they get taxed for the game they play there.
Yeah.
What all this does is take a percentage of that and cycles it back into paying off $150 million of the stadium.
Right.
So if there isn't a team, there is no tax.
If there's no athletes, then there's no tax.
So
pretty simple.
And then, oh, by the way, the remainder of that money goes to our schools. According to what I've read up on SB 5, mm-hmm. which would be the money goes to schools and helping
one of her most regrets as a politician. One of the biggest regrets in her life.
I didn't.
A huge regret.
I didn't really follow that
part.
What
a monster regret that you skim and you were persuaded.
Yeah.
Wonderful. How do you sleep at night?
Well, I mean, obviously, if that's her biggest regret, I mean, she's had a pretty good career, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, congratulations.
Bringing a $1 million, hundreds of millions of dollars to the city of Portland through baseball.
She brought that in, huh? Yeah, it'd be terrible.
No, it would be a really rough detriment
to this city to bring in jobs, housing, infrastructure, happiness, entertainment, joy. Wow, what an awful thing.
Yeah. I don't know. And yes, this texture says, don't
How
forget
people like that get elected. I have no idea.
Yeah. This says, don't forget her first comments days ago about it. She stated that the money is being taken away from bettering schools to help state funding for roads, et cetera, even though there's been no money in this account since it was made. And that is also very true. So, I mean, that's her problem is that the money, like there will, it's only a small percentage, but it's going to pay off the stadium while the other percentage is going to the schools mm-hmm. and in perpetuity, as the team is here for longer and longer, it keeps on funding the schools and the roads and all those things that she wants. But
it's a steady revenue stream of athletes and revenue coming in. Steady revenue. Endless stream.
As long as there is a team here.
I mean,
but only if there is a team here. So, yeah, it's confusing, to say the least. And this is just the beginning.
It's not
That's
confusing,
why.
Dusty. It's utter BS is what it is. It's not just confusing. It's political jargon wrapped around agendas selfishly based on what they think they want to gain power and control to hear themselves talk.
Because that sentence got it all out there, man. It is. I'm with you. We know exactly what it is, but that's what they're trying to do is just say, confuse you so you go away and you stop talking about it or asking about it. That's why you should call and email your representatives and let them know you support it. So we'll go ahead and do that. All right.
Thank you. That was a good one.
What?
The last text. Not the hashtag one, the one below that.
Oh. Is that the one that just says morons?
Yep. That's just it. That's it.
All right. I'll read that text. One thing that we need to follow up on. We had a lot of football on today's show. If you missed it, check it out. The Les Schwab Tires podcast at 1080thefan.com. We talked divisional rounds, AFC, NFC, quarterback play, had our wide right in case of the Mondays. But there's a follow-up from a story that we had a couple of months ago. And you and I said, sign me up. But Mike Leach is serious about it. Remember when Mike Leach in November sent out a tweet that said, if I were to do a class on leadership and military, football leadership and military, would you take it? You remember that when we talked about that?
I don't remember that.
I remember the one where he said he would go recruit in Cambodia or something like that.
I don't remember any of that.
On his
was I here?
Trip in Cambodia?
Yeah, no, this was back in November. We discussed this.
I do remember this, though.
Huh.
he wanted to do it with a former state senator who is a veteran up in Washington. And he actually just tweeted out yesterday, Mike Leach, that is, it is basically an outline of what the class would be. He's mm-hmm. going to do it.
Oh, it's a great idea. I take that tomorrow.
A 5-week course called Leadership Lessons in Insurgent Warfare and Football Strategy.
I love it. Just the sounds of it.
Yeah.
101.
A 5-week course from March 27th to April 24th, where the central question of the course is, how can insurgent forces facing a large conventional force develop and utilize asymmetric advantages to prevail in battle? And he's going to draw the parallels between warfare and his air raid offense, which was basically built because we don't have the physical, we can't beat you physically, so we're going to beat you schematically.
Strategically.
Yeah.
I love it. Game planning is kind of, I'm not a military, and it will be offended if you want, but football is a form of war, as much what I was taught and the learns of it. Football war, not specific.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not, and I'm not going overseas here, but that's kind of the mentality that the football players and everybody always thought of it in their own small little world of how to strategize and game plan and work and get all the things and lines and all of that built into it. That interests me beyond belief.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because I actually took military science when I was in college. It was one of my required science courses. Well, it wasn't required, but I used it to get some of my prereqs done. And I took military leadership because our football coach said to do it. And it was by like a major in the ROTC. And he drew the parallels to football almost every single day in that class.
Yeah.
And that was like it. Like you're right in that. Just kind of, it's a whole motivation tactic too. Mm-hmm. And strategic planning is, he said it was eerily similar. And that was coming from him, not me.
I love everything about it.
Yeah. He drew the parallel between flanking your enemy and running the sweep.
Yeah.
You know? Get onto
Vince
the outside.
Lombardi. Up the alley.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow from 6 to 9 a.m. Talk a little football. We got a game, an AAF game that we'll play at some point during this week as well. Up next is The Herd with Colin Cowherd from 9 to noon. Noon to 3 is Dirt and Sprague. 3 to 7, primetime with Isaac and Suk. Have a great Monday, folks. Enjoy the sun. We'll see you Tuesday right here on The Fan.